Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. On today's program, we'll be discussing the creation, offerings, and evolution of Green Star Co-op and Natural Foods Market. My guests are Brandon Kane, General Manager of Green Star, and Laura Buttenbaum, a Green Star staff and council member. Kane has worked in the natural foods industry for 18 years. He has held the position of GM of Green Star Co-op since 2010 and has helped to usher in many new projects and initiatives. Buttenbaum is a self-described co-op enthusiast and has been a member owner since 2007 and on staff since 2010. She is also a Green Star Council member elected to a three-year term this past July. And welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this is fun. Now, I want to start with the basics. Brandon, what was it that attracted you to natural foods and co-ops and this whole situation?
So that goes back to 16, 17 years old when I was really getting involved in the punk rock scene in Philadelphia, which is heavily political. And a natural extension of that was, you know, dealing with the exploitive conventional food business throughout the country. So the whole politics, the left-wing activist politics of punk rock, drove me towards natural foods. I became a member of Mariposa Co-op in West Philadelphia when I was 19, which now has blossomed and grown and expanded over the last several years. And so I just stayed in natural foods for those formative years. And then in my early 20s, when I moved to Hawaii, I started working at and eventually managing a natural food store in Maui.
Yeah.
Before I moved to Ithaca.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So this started really early. How about for you, Laura?
Yeah. So I studied ecology in college, and my eyes were opened to the ecology of our food and the impact that it has on our environment. And growing up in New Jersey and going to college there, I wanted to be someplace where there was a robust local food system. Moved out to Oregon, Central Valley, the Willamette Valley there, and joined a co-op. There's a great co-op out there, First Alternative Co-op, and that was sort of my foot in the door to the co-op world. Co-ops at that time were the only place where you could buy organic foods. This was
I remember
before
that.
The USDA had any part in organics. And I was just sold on the model as a business model, and it's been an important part of my life. Part of how I picked to move here to Ithaca was because there was a great co-op here.
Oh, so yeah.
And the community that those create, right?
Yeah.
They draw us to them.
Oh, I was so happy that we had a great natural foods market here. Yeah. Well, Brandon, tell us a little bit about the history of Green Star. Who envisioned it? How was it created? Just a tad.
Sure. And I think Laura and I can probably play off each other a little on this.
Okay.
So it started well before our times, before either of us were born. But the origin story generally goes around 1971, a group of Ithacans, seeing the need for out of the countercultural movement really at the time, seeing the need to, as an alternative to the corporate food structure, got involved with buying from farmers markets up in Syracuse in bulk, my understanding of produce, bringing that down and distributing among a buying club of members.
Wow.
Somewhere around 1971. Huh. And I think they organized themselves Ithaca Real Foods Co-op at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And for a number of years, they operated as a buying club. I believe somewhere in the mid-70s, there was a bit of a schism there when they started incorporating other bulk foods and adding things like refrigerated dairy and cheese.
They
essentially operated as a buying club for a number of years then, eventually getting a storefront in the early 80s. 1983, I think, is when our first storefront was established.
Yeah, Cuban Farm Street.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ran through the 80s up until the early 90s, where some significant occurrences happened, right, that sort of really pushed us into our current history. You want to take a little bit of that, too?
Yeah, sure. So in 1992, the store was actually destroyed in arson. So the building burnt down, and it was 9 months later in September of 92 that our owners decided to make the move to our current location at 701 West Buffalo Street, which was it brought in a significant change, really, to the structure of the co-op. At one point, it was only member owners who could shop in the co-op, and when we moved to this new location, they opened it up to non-members being able to shop. It really kind of modernized the co-op in many ways, bringing in POS systems eventually that, are scannable registers and things along those lines.
Yeah.
And that's the location we find ourselves still today.
Yeah, and it really brought challenges, right? The early days, it was maybe a couple dozen people, then a couple hundred people involved
in some
of the early storefronts.
Yeah.
You know, by the time I think we got to 1992, it appears from records that we were like at 1,000 or 2,000 members, you know, and so, interesting questions about how to maintain a democratic structure and participation, all those things came about. You know, hiring people and paying them wages as opposed to member only, like Laura was referring to.
Oh, yes.
You know, and so we operated a number of years like that until I came on around 2004. And we were just, actually, my first day of work was the day before we opened up our first satellite store at the DeWitt Mall, which was
no pressure,
one of the ways,
right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were like, come to work and stock our shelves. We're opening at 9 in the morning.
Oh, my God.
So we operated that store for a few years and then eventually started renting and in 2007 and then purchasing our warehouse property in 2010, which allowed us to sort of get to the next level and offer bulk purchase, other benefits to our members. And that took us basically to 2016, where we added our second satellite store up in College Town.
Yeah.
You know, and still the pressure on our stores just is enormous. You know, at this point, we've grown to how many members?
We currently have over 13,000 active members.
Do you really? Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about that, the member-owner paradigm. Where did that come from, and what was the vision for that?
I mean, that is fundamental in the cooperatives. We don't have a corporate parent. We don't have anything along those lines, but we're owned by our community. So when people join the co-op, they're not just becoming a member of some sort of discount club, but they're truly becoming an owner of the co-op. And so the benefits that go along with that, of course, are economic. Personally, we have owner deals and owner appreciation days. Owners can volunteer in the store and earn an additional discount, a 15.5% discount. We have a food access program for folks to earn a 13% discount. It's our flower program. And then there are democratic benefits. Every owner gets one vote. So voting on our board of directors, we call them our council, voting on things like expansion, which happened pretty recently. Earlier this year, our owners voted overwhelmingly to relocate our West End operations to a newer facility. And we have another vote coming up in
next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. It opens on the 29th, special vote part two, which is about whether or not we should purchase the building that we're going to be leasing for 10 years at the end of the lease cycle.
It's so wonderful to hear that it's such an active membership and ownership. Because, people join.
Yes.
I'll give you $2, and then they come in once a month and buy, a candy bar.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, that's so great. That's part of democracy, right?
It is, we have thousands of members of our community participating in every vote. And just think about how fundamentally different that is from a conventional, even a conventional natural food store still is run by, ultimately the profits go to shareholders, or a few owners. The profits get reinvested in cooperatives into the community to help that grow.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the logistics. How do you decide what kind of products you're going to have in the store? Is it a long process? to tell us if there's huge fights about it or what?
Oh, I mean, there certainly can be. Ideally, they're civil disagreements, but they can get intense because a lot of ideology is associated with their strong feelings around product lines. And if you look at our history over the years, you see we were, more or less a vegan buying club to begin with. We incorporated dairy, which was controversial.
We had to vote on whether or not we could have chocolate.
Yeah, there was there was actually a chocolate vote,
mm-hmm.
And it's still, it still resulted in the limitations that we're dealing with these days, which were absolutely positive. We could talk a little about that.
Mm-hmm.
But slowly things get added in. Poultry and fish in the early 2000s was a controversial vote at the time. Beer was rejected a few times, and I was part of a group that was able to, make an argument that membership voted very positively for eventually carrying beer and cider within the store. It's a big part of our local economy, and we are able to support a lot of it as a result.
It's true.
Yeah.
The products themselves, meat and milk and all that stuff, that's one aspect of it, but do you have to vote about where you're going to buy these things?
No,
what the criterion is?
Detailed.
Does it have to be
organic? Guidelines and focuses. So we focus on local. Local is a massive part of our choices,
And
as a matter of fact.
Local is 100 miles. So
exactly.
For Green Star, our council has defined local as 100 miles from Ithaca.
Right.
Within 100 miles.
I see.
So, we prefer to focus on offering local products first. Or at least support them as choices in our stores. I mean, as a matter of fact, we've grown so much at this point. Last year, local products accounted for about $6 million of sales. You know, that's so $6
wow.
million dollars to goods that are owned or produced within 100 miles of Ithaca is like, there's a big contribution to the local economy from that alone.
Oh, absolutely.
So we emphasize that. We emphasize other cooperatives. We support those businesses that are cooperatives on ourselves. Organic, you know, and
fair trade.
Fair trade. Those are all big components.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there's just, you know, what are people expecting in a natural food store? You know, we try to meet everybody's needs, but we avoid a lot of additives. We avoid processed foods whenever possible. Packaging limitations. All of those things we keep in mind. We try to make it sustainable, but also as palatable choices to our customers.
Yeah,
as well.
And convenient. People still want convenience.
Got to balance.
It's true. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, as the natural food industry has exploded, really, and as corporations have caught on to what co-ops had done so well for so long in offering natural and organic foods, we mm-hmm. also need to make sure that we're evolving then to meet the needs of our community. So we've met that mark. And now folks can really get some products, you know, in many places. But what co-ops can also do is make sure that they're meeting the needs. And like you're saying, the convenience. What aren't we carrying that makes it harder for people to do their entire shop at Green Star?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how can a larger location help us meet those needs so that people can?
That's what we're focused on now.
Get everything that they need at one stop.
You know, one of the concerns for a lot of people I've talked to about natural food stores is GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a policy?
With GMOs, well, the most fundamental issue, I think, with GMOs in our country, unlike Europe, is the lack of mandatory labeling.
Mm-hmm.
So to what degree GMOs are in our food is still a questionable. It's the jury is out in the U.S. on that because it's not clearly labeled on our products.
We
do have a policy of avoiding knowing if product clearly states that it contains genetically modified ingredients. We eliminate that from our product line. The issue is there is no mandatory labeling. Thing that co-ops do. We're part of a national network of cooperatives that is involved in political advocating too. We've been behind initiatives like Just Label It. And a few other basically initiatives that are pushing on a federal and state levels in some cases for the mandatory labeling of GMO ingredients in our products. And when that occurs, then we can really, you know, say unequivocally, we do not carry GMO foods.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense for me. That's what I like about health food stores, too. I mean, it gives people the choice. Mm-hmm. In major mass markets, sometimes they don't label anything.
Yep, and there's a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me about homeopathic medicines. Do you have a policy on that? I know you obviously sell some.
Well, we don't actually have a specific policy on homeopathic medicines. We do sell some. That's actually not my area of purchasing or focus either. And I don't know, Laura, if you touch on any of that in your work either.
No, that's not an area that I have a lot of experience with the purchasing and buying. But certainly the folks who work in our wellness department know what our customers are wanting, you know, and they keep the shelves stocked with the things that folks
are basically,
eating.
If it doesn't sell, we can't actually afford to carry it in our store
absolutely.
Because of the volume that we're pressured to sell out of our tiny little spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing I didn't add. Our product line is really dictated by our shoppers, not only through voting and initiatives like that, but it's simply like our feedback systems are extensive. Mm-hmm. And if something doesn't sell, it's gone because we're not beholden to any company to carry anything.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Brandon Kane and Laura Buttenbaum. They are part of the Green Star Co-op and Natural Food Market, and we're discussing the history and the future of Green Star. A lot of people have been telling me that they've noticed that there's more natural foods, more organic foods in all the stores, big and small. So how do you keep Green Star unique and people coming?
Do you want to start? Let me go with that one.
Either way.
We've been immersed in this for, you know, many years now. It's a difficult dynamic. Things changed drastically somewhere around when I started my job as GM, which is convenient. But we characterize it as the new normal. As we said just a little bit earlier, for many years, decades even, natural food stores and cooperatives were sort of the only game in town to get the product line we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then, you know, becomes the corporatization of natural foods.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at this point, you can get a kombucha at a rest stop on the Jersey Turnpike. You know, something I never thought was going to happen, right? So then it really does fundamentally become like, how do we differentiate ourselves? I should add, so that dynamic really, you know, we've gone from rapid growth in those periods of time when we were the only game in town, per se, of, you know, 7-8% a year. When you're growing at that rate, it's very easy to operate your business, cover your overhead, and put money aside for a rainy day. This new normal hit relatively overnight, and, you know, from one year to another, we suddenly were experiencing 1-2% growth, which has become the average now for cooperatives in the country. Under those conditions, it's very tough to operate. So here you have a company that does not have it doesn't have a wide range of a corporate model throughout the whole nation. You know, it has it's local, and so it has to really figure out how to operate within the constraints now of having much less to work with. You know, so a lot of it then becomes about outward focus. You know, what are we carrying that's unique? Are, you know, really talking about our contribution to the local economy, our contribution to the wages and benefits of our employees, what sets us apart? Yeah. And then we depend on people, basically our community, recognizing that and choosing to participate in Green Star for what it does and what it means, what its outcomes are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've noticed how knowledgeable most of the staff is.
Yeah.
I've been able to ask questions about, you know, personal care products and I've been really impressed.
Yeah, everyone's so passionate.
By that, yeah.
That's what draws us.
That's true.
Now, I know you guys are involved in sponsoring community events and you allow people to table in your space. How do you decide what's what with that? I mean, there must be some people who want a table who wouldn't agree at all with the philosophy, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, we do have a policy on tabling, and it's pretty open. I mean, most people are welcome to come and table. There are some restrictions that I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, if I'm being honest. There's a sign that, you know, folks who are tabling, their views are not necessarily represented. You know, they're not representing Green Star in what they're doing. But we know that conversation and communication for everybody is really important, and if it's respectful, you know, they can be out there.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are impressed by the fact that Green Star really is a community-based organization,
yeah.
Health food store, whatever you want to call it. And people feel like they're welcome there no matter what. I've run into people
I didn't know if I could come here
when I'm not a member.
Yeah. And I think that is part of the difference, too, that Brandon was speaking to, you know, how co-ops differentiate themselves from other natural food stores, that it is a community place. It's more than just selling products. Yes, we've all identified food as this need that we have, but really it's about people coming together and making community and meeting those needs and having conversations with one another and just building that community and supporting one another.
I have hardly met anybody who wasn't helpful. No, really. And then I understand people have bad days and stuff, but,
sure.
You know, I mean, people seem to know what they're talking about,
yep.
Which doesn't happen that much in this culture anymore,
yeah.
It seems.
It's a rare job where you feel like you're actually, it's a service position as well, you know, and not like customer service. I don't mean by that. I mean service to your community.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about the criterion for how you hire people, and I know you have volunteers as well,
mm-hmm.
to tell us what you're looking for.
Well, the criteria, I think, is you know, the goal would be of any retail store outlet would be, you know, we're looking for primarily knowledgeable folks. You know, a prerequisite of a commitment to natural foods is definitely, I mean, if you're interested in reaching the community, it's not just about natural foods. It's about an economic institution that benefits, you know, so that isn't really what we're looking for. We're looking for friendly people that want to interact and participate in the community and interact with customers on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, those that are interested to grow and learn more about the cooperative economy. And, you know, there's all different levels of participation from entry-level position, mm-hmm. you know, to you can grow within Green Star to, you know, being in a management position and we want to know if you're interested in that. So, you know, on the surface, we're looking for, like any other retail business, someone who is interested in participating in customer service primarily, you know, friendly and interactive. But then we're really looking for people that are interested in participating on that higher level as well.
Yeah, and do you make sure, I mean, if somebody's going to work in the cosmetic session or the, you know, the homeopathic medicine, do you make sure that they actually know what they're talking about and train them at all?
And even if they don't know, yeah, that's the thing. I think a willingness to learn is really important, and to engage is helpful too. And yes, there are ongoing trainings. In fact, just yesterday, our the wellness department is how we refer to them, had a training. They, you know, bring experts in and learn about the products that they're offering and things along those lines. Yeah. So it's ongoing. Yeah. Tomorrow we have an all-day HR training for staff. So education is a big part of what we do, too, for our staff and for our owners. We have classes and things like that, too.
Yeah, that's good to know. I mean, some people just say, this is going to be a job for me. You know, it's nice when you see some people who are real committed to the whole vision. I wanted to ask you about in-house food preparation and some of the hot bars that you have. Well, what's the criterion for that? Do you have real chefs?
Yeah, we do. we have chefs that are professionals in the industry, either from, you know, local restaurants. I mean, some of honestly have been with us for, you know, I think they've become local chefs through Green Star specifically, right?
Oh,
you know,
wow.
We've been here for, you know, over a decade, sometimes two in some cases. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of staff leadership that has come from the Cornell food industry to, you know, either they were wanted to get more involved in the local food system or step away from the sort of larger structure that is Cornell into, you know, the structure that they see at Green Star. And the criteria, yeah, full of local chefs. You know, we ask that they focus on local foods just like we do in the retail store. In the hot bar and salad bar, the same criteria for the rest of our product line is included there as well. So it's reflected in all of our prepared foods, that emphasis on local, organic, cooperatively owned when possible.
Yeah.
And the produce that they're using for a lot of their meal preparation is from local farms, which is really great. If you go to the salad bar on any given day, over 80% of the products on the salad bar are from local farms.
Right.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's the criteria, whenever possible.
Yeah.
That is so amazing. When I first moved here from California, I could not believe so many farms were in New York.
Me too. I was surprised.
It's so surprising, and there's such good products coming out of them, too.
And they're so passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah. And good entrepreneurs. Yep. I mean, really, they know what to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we run out of time, I want to talk about the expansions and all the new initiatives that are taking place as we speak. To tell us a little bit about them.
Well, I'll start and hand it over to Laura as well. So we're both heavily involved in aspects of expansion, certainly. So we're looking at basically the gist is we've outgrown our ability to meet our members' needs and our need for growth at our present West End store, that place we've been at since 1992.
Which we lease. We don't own that building.
Exactly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we only own our warehouse property and kitchen across the street.
Okay.
So the idea is essentially operate a new central store out at 770 Cascadilla Street. We're looking to move there by 2020. It essentially would be a consolidation of our West End store, our warehouse, our central kitchen, and space. We're basically going to take all of them from their present location and put them under one central roof.
Now, that makes sense.
Right. So these four different sort of operations we have across the West End, which is over about three blocks, will be in one location now. And, you know, we've known for quite some time our facilities were, you know, not sufficient in terms of parking spaces, and the retail floor was not large enough to meet all of the needs that our customers have for that sort of one-stop shop experience as well. So, like Laura said, earlier this year our members voted for the move, and construction is scheduled to begin sometime in November. There are two old Cornell warehouses. One is coming down for landscaping and parking. The other one is going to be renovated for a store. It's not a new building. It's a build within.
This is exciting stuff happening with Green Star. And you want to add a few things?
It is very exciting. Well, so part of what makes co-ops unique, again, I mentioned earlier, we don't have a corporate parent. So we are launching a capital campaign for our owners to be able to invest in the co-op. And so there's a lot that I cannot say because of New York state law, but I will say that it's a really exciting time to be a co-op owner and to have this opportunity to invest in the community, to really sort of put your money where your mouth is and invest to help Green Star grow, because the more that Green Star grows and can do, the more we're giving back to the community again, because as Brandon said earlier, our profits don't go off someplace. They stay here. They go back to our owners. They stay in the community. They help us support other local organizations that we donate to. They pay wages. And it all really stays here. So it's truly an investment in the community.
Right. And it only grows when we grow.
Right.
Right. Exactly,
And like Laura said, because we don't have, you know, this sort of larger corporate sponsorship here that can invest in expansion, we really depend upon ourselves. And we operate a very thin profit margin line. You know, it's hard to put money away for a rainy day, especially when we're talking about the normal compression of that low growth over the last few years. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, in that spirit of member economic participation, we really need our members to contribute to the expansion. And we're talking literally. We're looking for hands and voices, particularly to help, as Laura was referring to our capital campaign, which is just around the corner. I think I can say that it's opening September 17th is when it's going live in our community.
And it's
basically an owner investment program that we would like.
And
we need help to administer it, to reach out, to call, to participate.
Well, listen, the way this store is run, I'm sure you're going to get tons of people to help.
I hope so, yeah.
Because people think of this as a community. Not just a retail store or something.
Yeah. Right.
People always say, I'm going to meet you at Green Star.
Yes.
Let's hang out at Green Star.
Yeah, and
our cafe will triple in size.
Exactly. If you've seen the floor plan, it's going to be more of that. Could I put an email address out there if anyone's interested?
I'm going to do that at the end.
Okay, great. Excellent.
We'll be doing that. You know what I want to ask you, too? How has social media changed the whole co-op health food paradigm? I mean, you said that, 1992 was when some people were involved in some health food stores.
Right.
How has that changed things? Is it good or bad?
I couldn't say if it's good or bad. I think it's basically become another component that is mandatory to operate a business in our society.
Yeah.
So you don't get to say, I won't participate in social media. That's not an option.
Right.
And I think it's good because it's another vehicle of communication.
Yep.
The opportunities there are amazing. But it complicates the operations as well. So in that sense, it's gotten more difficult and more sophisticated to run a business. Photocopy newsletter won't do it anymore.
Yeah, I think any opportunity for dialogue is always a good one. But certainly, as Brandon said, you can't control what others may say. But it's an opportunity. And anytime people give us feedback, it's an opportunity for us to grow and learn and evolve to meet people's needs. But I think ultimately, it's certainly engaged with the student population at our Cornell location. And I think it's just another way to get our message out there.
Yeah,
I was thinking in terms of time consuming because somebody's really got to be there
or
they're going to think you're not, paying attention to them. What are you doing? This is my store too.
Right.
But what I'm fascinated with is the historical archive aspect of it. If you go to Facebook and look at the picture, you just see at this point, many, many years of Green Star history in photos that wouldn't exist otherwise.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's another really positive aspect of that.
Yeah. Well, we are almost out of time, so give us a little summation of what's coming next, how you feel about the growth.
Yeah, well, I think we got nothing but potential. It's the level of 13,000 members in a community of this size is just practically unheard of in relation to that.
Yeah.
We got a member meeting next Wednesday. That is actually the focus on that is to approve the purchase of our new location after we've leased it for 10 years. Okay. So here we have the opportunity. By 2029, we will basically we have the opportunity for our members to own 82% of the revenue that's generated in their co-op as opposed to leasing. So, and imagine what that means for the community to have to own that themselves.
Well, we are almost out of time. Contact information, how can people get in touch or volunteer or look for a job?
Well, if folks are interested in helping to cultivate the co-op and contribute to the capital campaign, capital@greenstar.coop is the place to go.
Right, and if they're interested in general information, expansion, my email address is probably best. That's bcane@greenstar.coop. Both available on the website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the website.
Greenstar.coop, COOP at the end, one word.
Yep.
Well, great. Well, Brandon and Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
it's been a great
so
pleasure
much.
To share my enthusiasm for this great co-op.
Thanks so much for
having us. Good luck in the future, too.
Yes.
Thank you.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.